Welcome to the Name Your Layers podcast, a podcast where I, Alyssa, talk to fellow designers and chat all things branding and design. We'll cover their background and sometimes their non-linear path to becoming a designer. We'll talk tools, fonts, and all things around brand identity and pretty much life stuff as well. This podcast doesn't require a design degree. You don't have to have a favorite font, and you don't even have to be a designer to listen. Come for the conversation, but stay for the good vibes. Today on the podcast, we have Johnny, and Johnny is a senior brand designer at Webflow, and honestly, the coolest person. I love Johnny's story. I loved his insight. I love just everything about him. This conversation was really fun to record, and I think you'll like it. So let's just jump in and enjoy Johnny on this week's episode.
My name is Juan Gomez Alzaga. I'm from Argentina, but ever since pretty much I've started to work internationally, I started to go by Johnny. And now I'm, I guess, more known as Johnny Gomez than Juan Gomez Alzaga. I'm a designer at Webflow, but I like to answer things like cooking, playing guitar, listening to records on a weekly basis, appreciating art, collecting stickers, enjoying my family and my little pup, and just geeking about design on a daily basis.
That's awesome. I like that. So you don't associate yourself with just being a designer. You're more than your job. You have a lot of hobbies and interests.
As Dan Petty said once, you're greater than your avatar. It's not just about who you are, where you work, which is like the most common stereotypical answer, I'd say.
Oh, that's so true. Especially with tech and everything, people tend to answer with that first versus your answer, which I love that. That's awesome. So how did you get started? Did you always want to be, you know, some sort of creative? Were you that kid that was drawing? Were you sketching? Or did you kind of have, you know, find your way into it a different route?
That's a great question. When I was maybe like up until my 16 years old, I wanted to be a chemical engineer. I don't know why. I love chemistry. And I don't know. That was what I thought I would follow. It's more what I would say like old school conventional. But then as I started getting into design and into art, I started, I guess you could say, working on forum signatures, profile pics for, I don't know, like $5, $10, like really like probably like the most like the highest client that I've had at that point. But when I started working on a couple of those, I started thinking like I can actually like quote like make a living out of this. Whether it was, you know, like either doing a couple of things or just starting to talk to like my first clients, and that's when I thought like, okay, what if I actually go to college, study design, and see how that goes. Which eventually I dropped out of college. I was working already at that time, working in design while studying design, and things like timing just like wasn't right. So I just stuck to work instead of finishing my college degree with just like a semester left.
Do you ever think about going back?
I think about that all the time. It's like a little splinter under my nail that is like, I was so close. Why didn't I finish? I did try to go back like two times, and both of those times I had like end of year or end of term, like not exam but presentation at the same time that I had client meetings, and I went for the client instead for the presentation.
That's cool. I mean, I think you'll finish it when it feels right, but I mean, your portfolio is amazing. So you fooled me, whether or not I can tell if you went to school, didn't go to school. I mean, it's all relative, but I think, like I said, your work is amazing. What is your favorite type of design to do? You said you started with like making the avatars, but what is kind of your current favorite at the moment?
So kind of like going through a little background on myself. I used to have my agency when I was in Argentina. And I run my agency with my business partner for around 10 years. And from the beginning, we would pretty much say yes to anything and everything. Logo, brand, web design, learning management system, lot of WordPress sites, fashion campaigns, photography, motion, you name it. That's how I kind of like trained myself and taught myself to be a generalist. By the time that I decided to move to the US, I noticed that most companies would usually hire specialists or like practitioners. Generalists would probably live better in either companies that have maybe like design teams, but where it's not like design led companies, or agencies, like advertising agencies, where it's usually smaller teams. And, you know, like you're probably better if you have like a wider skill stack. So I studied, I did like a boot camp on UI UX, and I started kind of like working on my skills, just like designing and kind of like getting one shot a day and just working on things just for the sake of working on things. I would like create like fake briefs and work on fake clients and just try to design things around fake concepts for very, very different types of industries and services. By the time that I started doing that, I was like, I realized this is what I want to do. I want to focus on UI. I want to focus on UX and in web design. And yes, I do have like branding projects, and I am part of the brand studio team. But I believe that, you know, brand is way more than the website, and way more than a logo itself. So I guess my answer to that would be UI UX, but since I have this like generalist background, I feel pretty comfortable and happy to work in all sorts of projects.
You hit the nail on the head there with brand is so much more than a logo, because that's what folks tend to associate it with. And that's partly why I started this podcast, for people to explain the difference between brand design and product design. And I've said this on a different episode, but I saw kind of a wave, and I don't know if you noticed it too, over the last couple of years, this, like, at least on Twitter and social media, a lot more product designers or UX UI designers. And I think it was just a sign of the times with, you know, companies looking for folks that can wireframe, but also kind of still have a brand eye. So that's why I wanted to find folks that also have the brand design background, so that you can explain the difference, because I think people just assume it's logos. So you hit the nail on the head there, is that it's not just logos. It's kind of all encompassing. So if you have that background, you can actually apply what you know with the branding to an app design, to what you're doing in Webflow, whatever the experience is.
I agree 100%. For me, it's about brand development and how the branding and the guidelines are actually developed and showcased across multiple mediums, websites. It could be an app. It could be Office. It definitely is the voice and tone of the company, how it's communicating on social media. There's a lot of things there. And about what you said about, I guess, like UI, UX kind of like being everywhere now. And there's, I don't know if hundreds, but there's like a lot of boot camps and a lot of people that have transitioned their careers from, I don't know, psychology to UI, UX, and people that are from industries that are totally different, especially with like this year and last year, with something like COVID, where a lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people just thought about transitioning into UI, UX. And I went to college when it was just like print design and web design or digital design. And those were the two, I guess, like main branches. And now you have so many different branches and so many different roles, job titles, that it just like expanded way, way more. And I really don't know how I feel about that, about all these different roles. At the end of the day, you just, you know, like you're doing your job and you're putting a lot of effort and work and care and projects, and your responsibilities might be way I guess I can be like not necessarily product design or not necessarily one specific discipline, you know, like a product designer could be doing brand things and vice versa.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, as someone, since you've done both, you've worked in-house and you've worked for yourself, what do you gravitate more towards? And I'm assuming you're also kind of doing your own thing while working full-time for a company, or are you just strictly doing the full-time in-house thing? And which one do you prefer?
I am a big Webflow fan, so I will always prefer working on Webflow above everything. But I do both. I do have freelance clients and I work on Webflow. The reason why I decided to join a company as well, it was because when I moved to the States, I've been, you know, in Argentina, I've been running my agency for too long, for 10 years, and I was tired of doing things that were not design related.
You don't like doing accounting and paperwork?
I'm going to be honest, and it might surprise you, but I don't. Yeah. So
most designers don't. That's actually why I stopped doing my own thing twice, because I was like, I'd rather be creative. I don't like paperwork. I don't like taxes. Extremely frustrating. So I get it. I think it's pretty common though.
Yeah. And honestly, I was in a situation where I didn't scale my agency in a way that when I moved to the States, I was like, okay, so I'm either going to join a company or I'm going to, like, my agency is now going to be multinational. And I don't know how that might look for other people. Like, oh, like, look at Cruz Barcelona. That was the name of my agency. It's a multinational agency. Wow, that's amazing. And honestly, it's a one business partner in Buenos Aires, one business partner in DC, and that's it. We're not really like a multinational agency. We're just two folks in different countries, and that's it. And since we didn't scale that much, you know, I was really longing for having a team, a bigger team, collaborating with other teams. And that's when I decided I would just rather find a job that, not literally, but kind of like a 9-to-5 job that I know that I don't have to be like working like 12 hours, 13 hours, 14 hours a day, just because it's my thing. And I'm responsible for, you know, like for taking care of my agency. With that came, you know, better health, better lifestyle, taking more care of myself, enjoying more of my family, and just being healthier overall.
Yeah, that's amazing. So to pivot a little bit, what are your favorite tools to work in? Are you a sketchbook person? Are you using the pencil on the iPad? What's kind of your go-to when, let's say they're like, all right, we're going to call me, or you've been given the brief. What's kind of your go-to? What do you turn to first?
So I don't have a set standard. I did used to sketch a lot. Pen and paper, that was kind of like my first step. I've been lately doing more iPad and pencil. There's an app called Figurative that you can actually use Figma in your iPad, which is pretty sweet, and you can just use a pencil to just like start wireframing there. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like taking one step, and I find myself several times just like being on a Zoom call showing my sketchbook on camera. It's like, can you see there? Like, that's what I meant. Or it's like, it's either that or scanning things, which is kind of like unprofessional. And I just decided to start doing that in the iPad. And then once I'm on my computer, Figma and Webflow are always going to be my main loves.
So what is it you do for Webflow? Because Webflow obviously is a no code website. Are you building templates? Are you working on the brand side? Can you speak to what it is you do like on the day-to-day?
Yes, of course. So I'm part of the brand studio team. The brand studio team works almost like as partners for all of the teams inside of Webflow. We work with a marketing team, with a community team, events, product design, people team. We really try to work with as many people as possible. Offering pretty much solutions to their needs and problems. That's kind of like the general answer. within the brand studio team, there is two areas. One is a creative area and the other one is the web design area. And that's the one that I'm part of, web design. So we are usually working on all of the marketing sites for webflow.com, mm-hmm. as well as having a certain influence in the brand and the brand development and look and feel overall.
That's awesome. What do you do for inspiration? Are you one of those people that you have like a go-to album or playlist? You go outside, you go for a walk, or you listen to a podcast? What's kind of what do you go to if you're either going to kick off a project or if you're stuck starting off?
So it might be a cliche, but Dribbble is a huge part of my inspiration process.
Not a cliche.
Scrolling down just for, I don't know, not hours, but you know, like a long time, and just seeing what's out there. A little bit of awards.com also for web design inspiration. Mm-hmm. Taking it outside of the screen and just maybe like seeing like architecture, books about design that document things that maybe the web doesn't have, like logo books, and web design books. Luckily, the company that I work for gives us a stipend for education and for books. And it's intended to be for conferences and books, but conferences have taken a little spin in the last couple of years. So I'm pretty much spending my whole stipend on books, and I love it.
That's awesome. Do you have any recommendations for your favorite book that you would recommend someone that's either, you know, stuck or looking to get into design? What's kind of like the one when someone's like, hey, Johnny, I'm looking into do what you do. What book would you recommend they read?
I would say there's different books that I would recommend depending on what you're trying to focus on. The Win Without Pitching Manifesto by Blair Ans is one of those books that kind of like opened my mind to business and design and how to actually talk to clients and what your stance is and kind of like how to value yourself to what you're bringing to the table. That is to the day one of my favorite books.
No, that's a good book. That's a good book. I like that book. I will link it in the show notes and on the website so people don't have to try to like scribble back and try to remember what he said. I love that. Are you a music person? I mean, you said you listen to music in your free time, but do you listen to music to work or do you find it distracting?
I'm usually listening to music. If I'm sitting on the computer, I'm probably listening to music. I love Spotify. Huge fan of my Discover Weekly playlists.
Isn't it crazy how well they know us? Like my Discover Weekly is pretty on point, I find.
It's usually every Monday I go through the whole playlist and I find myself like at least like in 6 or 7 tracks, just like command tabbing to Spotify and seeing like, what is this? Like this, like how come I never heard this before? And that kind of like takes you like through like down the rabbit hole of like, what is this band? Like, oh my God. And they have like all these amazing songs and just like discovering. I really enjoy that.
That's awesome. No, I agree. I think it's funny when people are pro Spotify or pro Apple Music. I always like hearing the differences, but Spotify must say has the curation down. I always say for me, at least, it's because I've been using them longer. So they just know me and my taste. So I appreciate that. No, that's really awesome. So, one question I always like to ask people is, would 13-year-old Johnny understand what you do? Would he get it? Would he be impressed? Would he be like, oh man, we had other plans? What would he say to like present day Johnny and what you do for a living?
I would say that 29-year-old Johnny wouldn't understand what's happening right now, or 28-year-old Johnny. I believe my life has taken a huge spin ever since I've got a job at Webflow. Whether it is exposure or recognition or just me being my best self and me trying to push my best work being in this company, I'm hard on myself. I try to have like a certain standard, and when I don't, when I'm not on that standard, I just push myself to, you know, to be better, to iterate, to question myself a lot. And when I was 13, I didn't really know what I wanted to do. Like you see like 13-year-old kids right now, and they're like, they're doing way more things and they're way more active than what I used to be. As I told you before, I wanted to be a chemical engineer until I started doing this. And he would probably not understand what is going on and why I actually took this spin, but I feel like he would be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, I think he would be stoked just to hear our job. He may not, like you said, he may not even know this was like a career choice back then, and then he might have lots of questions like, well, where did we turn, where did we change our mind? And that's why I always like to ask this question, because I had read a study and it's been referenced in many books that kind of 13-year-old us is who we're always trying to impress when we get like some money or some sort of anything. We always try to go back and like think of what was that toy or that album or whatever that thing was that you really wanted at 13, because it's such a pivotal age that you couldn't afford at the time, or your parents just said no for whatever reason. That's what they say is the person we're always trying to like secretly please. So I think it's funny and interesting when I ask that question, because some people, yeah, have the answer of like, oh, they would think like, what the hell happened? Like you were going to do this and now you're doing this. And there's other ones that are like, oh my God, young me would think I am the coolest and would appreciate it. And I just think it's a fun answer. That's really awesome though. I think that's I mean, I like it. I would love to know, like, if I knew you at 13 and knew you today, I'd be like, well, what happened? What? How did you go from a chemical engineer to a designer? Because those are, like, far apart. Do you ever see yourself maybe going back to that route, or are you pretty content in the creative space?
Absolutely not. I would not go back. I do not take for granted everything that has, like, one way or another happened with my life, whether it was granted to me or whether I got it because of either, you know, luck, effort, mm-hmm. privilege. You know, there is, like, I'm never going to take this for granted. I was a designer from Argentina, working in a medium to low, I guess, like, profile agency, working with good clients, but just, like, not doing what I do and not being able to have the reach that I have now. And I'm honestly stoked. And I believe that 13-year-old Johnny would be stoked to know, you know, like, I don't know, like, you, I like to use the phrase change your stars, you know? And I believe that to a certain point, I've changed my stars, and it's probably, like, worldwide. Like, if you think about the tech industry or the design industry, most of it is happening in the States. Headquarters are in the States. Brands are in the States. Companies are in the States. So being able to work here, and even more, like, in this, like, so praised Silicon Valley or San Francisco, or the California area, you know, for me, it's just something that it just, I'm always happy to wake up and know that I'm working for this company.
That's amazing. Do you think 13-year-old Johnny would use Webflow? Would you have made a website back then if it was possible, just, like, for fun?
Man, I tried when I was, like, not 13, but maybe older, like, using Frontpage and Dreamweaver. It wasn't as accessible and as approachable as it is now.
That's so true. That is one thing I always tell people, that I wonder what it would have been like to grow up today with YouTube and Webflow, and just, there's so many tools that you can use that lower the barrier to entry. Like, Adobe is notoriously expensive. Figma is free. Mm-hmm. Figma has lowered the barrier to entry for so many people. You can just access it from your web browser. You don't even need a Mac, because that was a thing for a while too. Is like, it was like you had to have a Mac for whatever reason. And then Figma came around, and it's like, no, you could use it from a Chromebook. You can use it wherever you have internet. You can use it from your phone, your iPad, whatever it is. So I think it's exciting. I love that companies like Webflow exist and just making it more accessible for whoever across the world to build their dream, whether it's their website, their merch store, their blog, whatever it is. And I'm personally a fan of Webflow. At first, when I first found out, I was like, this is actually, like, I was overthinking it because I was used to coding. And I was used to things being so complicated. And then I had to, like, step back and be like, okay, forget everything you know and just go in. And then from there, it made way more sense.
Yeah. And I believe there's, like, a general advocacy from multiple industry leaders and important companies to democratize design, such as Figma, web building, such as Webflow, 3D design, such as Spline, the entry price and the entry knowledge, the bar has been lowered to a point where you're going to have a 13-year-old kid designing amazing things in Figma, building amazing things in Webflow, creating amazing 3D art in Spline, and, you know, and other tools. Like, those are just three of the many, many amazing tools that are open. Like, I don't know, like Zapier, you know, like, there's so many of them. They're changing people's lives, people's businesses, companies. There's companies being bought that started a couple of years ago, all out of no code, which for me is mind blowing.
I think it's awesome. I'm excited to see where it goes, especially, you know, with the pandemic. I see some silver linings that have come from it, of just, like, people have really turned to their creative side. People, like you were mentioning, some people have actually turned to becoming designers because, like, if not now, when? Like, I have this opportunity, whether it's, you know, one door closing, or I'm going to take it as a sign that I should finally just do what I've always wanted to do. So I'm excited to see, especially with things, people being remote, because you can literally do anything now. I mean, with just your Wi-Fi connection. So I'm excited to see where it goes. But one thing I wanted to ask you, because like I mentioned earlier, your portfolio is amazing. What has been your favorite project you've worked on to date?
I would have two. One would be inside of Webflow, and the other one would be when I was running my agency. Let's start with the first one. when I was running my agency, we would be working on a lot of like different disciplines. Building a store and kind of like designing like signage and kind of like applying the brand across the store and the brand and across not only one but multiple stores was definitely one of my favorite projects. It was a premium meat shop. We were introducing a concept in Buenos Aires that really wasn't there. We were trying to change the buying experience for the customer. So in Argentina, it's very common to go to a butcher and then you ask for a piece and it's kind of like cut for you in the moment. And it's not the best and the cleanest way to buy your produce. So this client approached us with kind of like working on their brand, and we just try to think about a whole different experience about like upscaling the meat experience and just like being able to work in so many different aspects, whether it was, you know, thinking about like the actual store, like what do we want to do, like environmental design, like to make the store look like really, really good. And we didn't really have like a budget like limitation. So we could pretty much do whatever we wanted. Our decision for like the art direction was very respected and very accepted. And I don't know, like we just had a lot of fun, and we worked on 3 or 4 different stores that had like that were like located in different places in Buenos Aires or in Argentina in different provinces, and therefore kind of like styling each different store to like their neighborhood or like their area. It was super fun.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. What was like the start to finish? Was this like something you had a lot of time to do, or was like, no, we need to have the MVP or at least the final thing done as quickly as possible, or did you kind of have some time to work on it?
So our time constraint was the store was being painted and renovated. So we were like kind of like on this countdown of like, okay, when are the people going to finish, and when will they be able to kind of like open the store? So we had to kind of like plan everything accordingly. Like we had like a mural and a muralist that we had to call and just like get that made in advance. And definitely a lot of moving parts when it comes to print in big scale and like in high quantities. That means, you know, you got to talk to press centers and see like when your work is actually going to get printed. And it's like, you know, like printed in 15 business days. It's a different country, different times. There isn't this like maybe like industrialization to have like things be like delivered through Amazon like 2 days later. Some things would be available, some things would not, and we would just have to roll with it. So we had to work with many different vendors to get specific like shopping carts, and we had to work with vendors to get specific fridges and kind of like custom made fridges for those specific measurements, so that those fridges would like fit exactly the way we wanted to. We would just like decide like, okay, so we want to put this like stamp, kind of like a huge stamp, almost like flooding the store in like with the brand. And we need to have like this wall is going to be clear, and there's nothing that like nothing should go in this wall. So it was like negotiating and seeing like, okay, it's like how much can we actually take? How much can we actually do? What is very out there? What isn't? It was extremely fun. I loved it.
That's amazing. Is it still up today? Are all your artwork and mural and everything still there?
They all are. Yes. There's only one thing that is like this mural that after, I don't know, it's been probably like 7 years. And I'm not living in Buenos Aires anymore, so I can't vouch for how that mural looks now. and you know, I'm not working with that client anymore. So I don't really know if they renovated it, if they polished it again. If they didn't, I would recommend that they did.
Was it cool to see your vision off a screen, to see it like literally like in 3D on a wall? Was that the first experience of that, and did you love it?
We did work in other projects like designing offices and office spaces, and I would say that there's it's a very gratifying moment to just see the result when it comes from like a Photoshop mock-up to an actual real final product. It's a beautiful thing to whether it is, you know, and probably for any designer that worked in print, seeing their finished product is one of the most satisfying moments. I mean, it could go the other way, of course. And once you see what you did and like, oh my God, they use the wrong color or stuff like that. But for me, it was like, it's just very satisfying. And it was very satisfying seeing like all the different things that we did across multiple stores, across different styles. That one was probably like the first project that I felt like we could take like professional pictures of this and have like a really, really good high performing case study on Behance. We never did, but we should have.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that brings me to a question because you brought up Dribbble already, and I like to ask designers, Behance or Dribbble? Which one do you use for which reason?
Dribbble 100%. It's where the designers are. I have worked on Behance case studies. I believe it's a different target. My research part and is probably always going to be done on Dribbble. And I would recommend designers to be on Dribbble. But I've seen amazing case studies in Behance too. It's just, it's not the right tool for me, I guess.
No, that makes sense. I've heard different things. It just depends where you go. What I really like to do is, I don't know if you've ever had this experience with a client when they don't really know where to start, or they kind of have like this, all these ideas, and they kind of feel, I notice they start to feel overwhelmed before they even really start talking to me. I like to send them to Dribbble. Like, look, it start to get inspired, especially working in tech. I'm a lot of times like communicating with people that don't speak design, usually aren't even in marketing. They just kind of have like an idea, and they always start with like, we want it to look like X company, or like, I saw this at the booth at Dreamforce and I want us to do it next year. So I always like to send them a Dribbble, and like, you can search by color, you can search by you know, element, whatever it is you're looking for. So if it's trade show backgrounds or what have you. And I find Dribbble is more approachable for the non-designer, if that makes sense. Like they're like, oh, I can search by color, and then they start to get inspired. And for that way, I like it because people really respond to color, designers and non-designers. So I found the most success by sending clients or bosses or stakeholders or whoever, like, hey, just play with Dribbble, search by color, search by kind of like whatever it is, it's a logo, a trade show booth, etc. And you'll probably find something. And I show them like, hey, you can either screenshot them or you can make a collection and then send it to me. Essentially what I'm doing is like showing them how to make a mood board.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I feel like it's less overwhelming. I've done something similar before in InVision, and it's InVision. I've noticed it's kind of overwhelming for some people. They're like, they just want to do screenshots. Or I've even had some people just like, hey, I found this on Pinterest. I'm like, that works too. Pinterest is fine. what's the Webflow project that you're proud of, or your favorite project, I should say?
Yes, and the Webflow project is the website that we worked on for No Code Conf. Was a conference in San Francisco, 2019. Perhaps the first and maybe one of the biggest No Code conferences out there. It was one of my favorite projects because it kind of like took me out of my comfort zone. I was working with a designer from the creative team. Her name is Pear, and she's so talented, and I'm so proud of having her working at Webflow. And the thing that I love about this is that we don't have the same style. Like my style is nothing like her style. I guess like some people might take that as a limitation. For me, it was like, okay, how can I take her vision online? I want to take her style and her design and bring that to life. So whether it was, you know, through layout or through deciding like how to use like elements that she worked on, and maybe like adding like smooth interactions, it's kind of like the same thing that we were talking before, like, you know, like bringing designs to life. The reason why I enjoy this so much is because I felt like I brought her design to life, and she was just so happy and so grateful for, awesome. You know, having illustrations being used and being like interactable in a website. I loved it. And also, you know, it's just working on a conference for a product that I care so much for a community that I care so much for, that showcases people that I'm either a fan or a friend. It was, you know, it's very satisfying.
I think that's amazing. You know, it's funny. I was looking up right now because it's like I remember in my head what it looked like, but I wanted to make sure before I said something. Yeah, I remember when this came out and I was like, this is clean. I really liked it. I liked the aesthetic. At the time, we were getting ready for, because that was around the week before Dreamforce 2019.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And we were doing something, we had a similar color palette. It's funny, my head of demand gen and I, we pitched a similar color palette to this because we were like, hey, let's stop doing the typical, you know, startup or tech blue because we wanted it to be more fun. We didn't get to use it for our Dreamforce booth. We went very sterile blue. It still worked, mm-hmm. different hues of blue as well. But then for our first virtual event, like a company-wide thing with our customers, we had it in fall 2020. That was the color palette we used because I was like, hey, I want to bring it back from no. Because I was like, I really liked what No Code did, and it was one of those things. I saved it on Dribbble. I think I even had a desktop or a screenshot on my desktop, and I was like, I'm gonna. It's like a designer. We always have this. Like, I'm going to use this for something, and I really wanted to use it. So I actually borrowed your color palette for our virtual event we had in the fall. So thank you. I didn't even know that was you.
Of course.
I'll give you royalties of the event that we charge no money for if you want.
That would be all the props would go to Pear, Talented Designer. Oh,
that's amazing. What did make the cut for both projects? The, you know, the mural and this that you really wish, like, I would have liked to see those in. Were there anything that you really missed that didn't make the cut?
For No Code Conf, really, no. Like, there was so, like, and the environmental design, how the conference was designed, and how much liberty we had to bring our designs to life through many different places, like whether it was like we had like a side stage that was like a vintage like 60s like drive-through cinema. We had like a customized like kind of like coffee spot, all branded as well. There were a lot of things like there were like. We were doing a lot of like modular and geometric design. So they were like, you know, like spheres and pills and blocks and like many things like around the venue. Mm-hmm. That was like, it was great that we really had no like budget limitation, or at least it didn't feel like it with all the vendors that we had. Mm-hmm. And then for the other one, for this meet shop, I don't feel like there was something that we couldn't do. We had a lot of liberty when it came to creative freedom, and we also had this I guess it could be a limit or not, that we were like, this store was opening stores, the meat shop was opening stores in Puerto Madero, which is like the most like techie modern place where all the buildings are like super shiny glass and like very modern architecture. So we had to have like something that was like that style. And then we had another one that was more almost looked like a ranch in the middle of the suburb areas. And we were able to kind of like brand and just make everything look kind of like that with like rustic parts and old wooden repurposed wooden frames.
That's cool. No, I love that. That's so cool. And again, I didn't even know. I mean, those are just so different, but also you can hear just like hearing you talk about it. You're clearly like, you're still in it. I feel like you're explaining the process as if it just happened yesterday. So I love that. I love hearing the passion behind both stories, especially No Code Comp. Cause like I said, I saw it and I was like, damn, that's cool. Like I was really impressed. And now knowing that you were part of that, that's cool. It's almost as cool as like meeting a famous person, and maybe even better.
Oh, thank you.
Hey everybody, today's shout out goes to Coffee And. And full disclosure, Coffee And is something that is mine. this is the first shout out that is something that is owned by me, and I'm super stoked to share it with you. It's called Coffee And. It's apparel, black hoodies specifically, and each one has a message. So we have Coffee And Hoops, Coffee And Souls for the sneaker fans, Coffee And Equal Pay, which is something that's really important to me as a big advocate for women's sports and equality in sports and equality in everything. And I'm stoked to share it with you guys. So check it out at coffeeand.so. The link will be in the show notes, but yeah, definitely check it out. Let me know if you're into it. If you get a hoodie or something, send me a picture. And thanks for supporting. All right, let's get back to the show.
What would be your dream project with your dream client? Assuming, you know, there's no budget limitations, what would be like a dream project of yours that you hope to one day work on?
I don't know why I always had something with basketball courts.
Oh.
I don't play basketball, but ever since I've seen FDOT paint a basketball court for, I believe, WeWork in Mexico, and also the Hood sisters from Chutzpah, they also worked on a basketball court. I don't even know what type of client or project that would be. Like, who would actually have that as a project? But
I know you said you don't really follow basketball, but basketball, they do things, especially for different, I guess, themes. So we just had I'm a big basketball fan, but they just had All-Star Weekend this past weekend in Atlanta. And if you look at the footage, they did a custom court design. They'd always do it. Like, teams do it for different events, but they usually do it for like All-Star Week. And it was themed and it was very cool. And I kept thinking like, wow, that must've been so fun to make an illustrator, because I'm assuming it was made an illustrator. But they do that. They do that for special events. And I could totally see you doing that. I mean, you would knock it out of the park just hearing what you've worked on. I think, you know, it'd be, whether it's a basketball event or a basketball, you know, special, whatever, team thing, I could totally see you doing that. Why not?
Webflow
sponsors like the Warriors, especially once everything opens back up, they sponsor Chase Arena for the Warriors and they do like Webflow night. There you go. That'd be cool.
Can you imagine?
Once you do that, because I know it's a matter of time before you work on that, I just want to see pictures. I'd be like, hey, I remember when you talked about it? He's doing it now. So I could totally see you doing that in the future.
I will be the first one to share that publicly, and you will be the first one to know if I ever do that.
Yeah, that'd be so cool. I can see you doing that. Anybody else?
And then perhaps like music albums. I never worked on something like that. It would probably be, I don't even know like which band, honestly, because I usually listen to music that's not, that from artists that don't really publish anymore or are not really.
They're not as active anymore.
They're not as active anymore, yeah. But I always like the possibility of making, like, working on an album. I'm an avid record player, record listener.
Collector?
Mm-hmm. And yes. And I usually try to go for records like limited editions or special.
You're speaking my language, Johnny. Yeah, I've been spending an unhealthy amount lately on vinyl. And I'm like, okay, I got it. I was literally like, I got to dial it back. Like, okay, I need to close some tabs of stuff I still want to buy. Like, I need to. So, you know, I totally get that. I actually see some. My other podcast is called Your Favorite Record. And I talk to designers that work on album art. And it's and one of my guests coming up, he was actually explaining the difference because he's been doing it forever. And he never thought he would see the resurgence of vinyl. But how it's a totally different experience, at least from his perspective, going from designing CDs to vinyl. He enjoys it. But it's just different. It's just a different, you know, medium. Or he gets projects sometimes where it's re-releases, so it was a CD first, and now that vinyl's, you know, the hot thing at the moment, he's making re-releases of like 10-year anniversaries, and then he gets to go find like the original files and then make them, you know, aspect ratio for the vinyl, the record size, and then doing different things. And I wanted to ask him, because I'm talking to him next week, and maybe you have a similar question as someone who listens to vinyl, I've always wondered, does the designer have a say on what the actual plastic, the actual record looks like? Because, you know, there's so many limited editions. I'm assuming they're pitching like, hey, what if you did like, you know, colors, or you did this or that? And so that's something I've always wondered. And I was like, if that's the case, I would love to like have like to pitch different ideas for the plastic.
So I would love to actually do that. As I was saying, like, I like to go for records that are like kind of like limited edition, that are like, I like tie-dye colored, or just like not the classic back, which is usually like limited editions or small batches. There's this one that always comes to my mind. There's this band called Wolfpack, I believe that's how it's called, or Buffpack. The album is called Fail of the Arts, and the actual record is actually like has the lines of like where every track starts and ends. And
oh,
it's like,
so cool.
you can actually see, like, there's a text that says like, that names every track. And it's it's like a white vinyl with like really strong and bright red type. Very like, I don't know, like modernist, I guess. And you know, I have like, I love the band, but I love more the album in itself than the actual band. And just like the thought that, you know, like they went through that. It's like, it's intentional, and I appreciate that.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of miss about the pre-Spotify days, is buying albums because they just looked cool. You're like, I have no idea who this band is, but I appreciate the design, or, you know, whatever special thing. I can't think of the band off the top of my head. I've bought vinyl records just because it's like, that looks like art. I have no intention of ever playing it because I don't even know if I would like it, but it just looks cool and it looks like art, and I may be making somebody, you know, upset by saying that, but sometimes it is. It's art, and I think it's really cool, and and that's another one. I'm not just saying this, but I could see you designing that. That would totally be up your alley. And if you do, then you can answer my question though, of like, do they let you pitch the vinyl design, the actual plastic?
I would appreciate a client that lets me actually pick that. And, you know, the designer is the artist, so whatever the designer says goes.
That's the dream, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure we've all had we've all had the clients that are not the dream, unfortunately. That's not what this podcast is about. We're talking about the happy stories. I like to take it back. So what would 13-year-old Johnny be interested that you would design for him? Like, what would be that dream project where, like, 13-year-old you would have been like the buyer or the customer for it?
Well, album buying, not records, but CDs, mm-hmm. like discs, yeah. were one of the main things that got me into this. My first album was an album by Blink-182. And
okay, which one?
I believe it was the first one. It was like a nurse in the cover.
The
one with all the hits. It came out maybe like when I was 13 or 14. That was my first album.
Came out at the right age for you, where you were just like,
yeah.
Hey, yep. No, that's, I mean, that was their demographic too, but that record was 13, 14-year-old dudes mostly. I listened to it with not a dude, but no, that would be cool. Have you ever, I know you like to design stuff. Have you ever thought about just like for fun, like on a Saturday night, doing like your own take? Like if they called you tomorrow and were like, hey, Johnny, we're going to do a re-release for whatever, I can't do the math, like 20 plus year anniversary. Would you do that? Would you ever like enjoy doing something like that? A rebrand, like a fresh take on the album?
I would definitely enjoy that. I don't know if, you know, Blink-182 and myself have the same style, or if I could like work on something that, you know, shows their image the best way. But I would like to take like my spin on that. That would be great.
That's so cool. I could see that. The one I've always wanted, so I have a similar answer. I really love their self-titled. It was the one with the smiley face with the X's and the arrows.
Yes.
It has the mm-hmm. So that came out, maybe that was high school for me. I don't remember now. But that album, I loved it as like a design. And I remember, you know, back when, obviously they still do this, but when it was parental advisory, I remember it was mm-hmm. a thing where like, I can't remember the color, but one of them, parental advisory and non, had different CDs were a different color. So one of them was the teal and the other one was the pink. And I remember being like a thing where people could tell like friends of yours, because it was CDs back then, like if you had the edited version or if you had the parental advisory, and because they would see you like put in your Walkman. And I remember it was like the thing to do, and I had the edited version because that was just, I don't even think my parents didn't really care, but it was just that's the one we bought at the store. And I remember that was a thing, and I was like, that's so cool that the designer thought to do that, like to make them different, so it's like a different experience. And at this point, I've seen things on forums that people have collected both. They've collected both because, you know, it's at this point, it's kind of a collector's to have both of them.
Yeah. And you know, designers used to design the album cover and the back, and, you know, some were also like going for like adding like a little like leaflet or something to, you know, show like the lyrics or other things. And it was just cool to see how different bands would show like different content in so many different ways.
That's so cool. I can see you doing that. That'd be awesome. What is some advice that you have for someone, you know, it's so twofold, someone that wants to do what you do, it's a younger person who aspires to, you know, get into the design world. And then the person who's, you know, already been working, maybe they're pivoting because of COVID, maybe they're pivoting for whatever reason, but they've already kind of worked and done their thing, but not necessarily in design. What advice would you have for both of those people to, you know, to get started?
My number one would always be healthy. My number two, getting more into design, would be ask questions, as many questions as you can. If you have a question, ask away. Be there and reach out. Don't be afraid to reach out to anybody, to any designer. If there's someone you admire, you know, reach out, send a message. Just that might get you like under the radar. You never know what one DM might get you to. might even get you to talking on a podcast, you know?
Exactly. There you go. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of a cold DM. You never know. Because the worst someone could say is no. And then you're in the same spot as not asking them. So you have actually a higher likelihood of getting something out of it, at least.
I'm a big fan of sending, you know, like cold email saying, hey, I love your work. You are amazing. Have a great rest of your week. And, you know, you also never know what impact that might have on whoever you're sending that to. And also, you know, if you like something, show appreciation. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, totally. I've had a similar thing. I've had someone reach out to me and they just wanted to like compliment me. And I was just one of those, like, I wasn't having like the best day. Like work was just like, ugh. And then I got that email and I was like, oh, mood turned around. Like it was just, you honestly could just make someone's day. Even if like they maybe don't respond to you, not saying that I didn't respond, I responded because I was like, oh, this is cool. But yeah, sometimes people just like, I think that's the beauty of Twitter too, of you can engage with people you don't necessarily know, whether it's peers or folks that you've aspired to work with, or even like celebrities or famous band members or what have you, because maybe they don't respond, but they probably saw it at some point and were like, hey, that made my day. Like, cool. Thank you for saying the nice thing about, you know, my song or my art or whatever.
Absolutely. And especially Twitter. Like Twitter, I don't know if it's not as big as it is here in Argentina, but I was not active at all on Twitter. And ever since I moved to the States and I wanted to kind of like get my name out there and start, you know, like talking to people and networking and connecting with other designers, I've started talking to people in, you know, whether it was just like connecting with them, whether it was like sending an email like, hey, you know, like want to talk about design pretty much. Hey, I love your work. Whether it is mentoring and offering, you know, my expertise or lack of expertise with other people. And, you know, I probably have this like all over my profiles everywhere, which is hashtag sharing is caring. If there's something that I have that you might need or might use, then who am I to say, no, I won't share this. You know, whether it is knowledge or design expertise or tips, you know, I'm one of those people that will always answer. I'm one of those people that will always get back to you just because I care, just because I've been there on the other side of like sending a message and somebody not answering. And me saying, me just, you know, like imposter syndrome kicking in and thinking like, why would they answer me? They don't even know me. What am I doing? So I just put myself on the other place, and I'm just all about sharing is caring and just being a nice guy.
Yeah, I agree. As someone who, I mean, we don't know each other. I reached out to you on Twitter and you responded, and I can attest that Johnny is a nice guy. He very much is. this episode wouldn't be happening. One question I like to always ask people, especially, you know, folks that have done their own thing, but also worked on teams. What advice do you have for people that work with designers, whether they're marketers, sales, you know, higher up like C-level, like what advice do you have for folks that are like, hey, how can I, you know, whether it's how can I communicate better with my designer? How can I do this? Like what would you say is, you know, some tips and tricks of the trade?
I would say it's a back and forth in the way of like, it's that collaboration. Remember, we're all pushing for the same side, for the same objective, for the same goals or OKRs or whatever, however those are measured as your company. Or I guess put down into simpler words, we're on the same team. And I believe that it's like the main thing to always know. And ideally, you know, the designer is an artist, and an artist needs to be respected. Nobody told, you know, artists like Picasso to not paint a blue painting that's only blue. And it's now like 7 feet by 7 feet. Nobody told him to not do that. And here we are. Let artists express themselves.
I love that. That's so true. I mean, the same team thing is definitely one of those, I think some folks forget that you're all on the same team, you're all working towards the same goal. What about people that are trying to figure out how to communicate with their designer as far as like, you know, make it relatable? And because for me, my answer is always like, I'm never gonna make you think like a designer or a marketer. You just tell me what you're trying to accomplish, and it's my job to figure out how to get you what you need at the end of the day. But do you have any advice on how to, you know, how to work around that?
It's not, I believe that there's not like a one recipe for everything that, and that it works for everybody and every team. But I believe good design is about addressing problems and fixing problems at, you know, at any scale and any type of problem. But as you're working with somebody from other teams, those teams should come to you with a problem, and it's up to designers to see what the best solution for that is, or how can they actually improve, you know, their user experience, or improve conversion, or just, you know, make a website more appealable for the company, like X company's customers.
Yeah, no, that is a great way to put it. I love that. Is there anything you wanna share? Something you're excited to be working on, or maybe trends you're seeing that are coming up, and what kind of excites you about whether projects or designs or anything that you're looking forward to?
I do like the introduction of 3D, and with what I mentioned before about, you know, 3D being more democratized and more accessible to people that are not really, I guess, like 3D savvy. Seeing that more involved in the web design, I believe it's something that's happening right now, and that it will only grow. And also, COVID has, like, besides everything that it has done, one of the things that I believe has caused in designers is making design more approachable, and going back to feelings, to using textures, to having 3D shapes and design that almost feel like, you know, a I don't know, like a wooden sphere or a porcelain, I don't know, like deck or stuff like that you're actually seeing. It's like almost like design is being more and more connected with feelings. And whether that means, you know, apps like Dispo coming out, and apps like Clubhouse, which it's just kind of like going back to how it used to be, you know, like there is no need for video. We can just make like open phone calls with people, and, you know, people are starting to connect more with the simpler things in life, and not necessarily overcomplicating, you know, UIs or experiences or over polishing things.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That's a good point. I'm excited to see what's to come of it. I think people are more creative than ever now, it seems, or maybe the internet makes it feel that way. So I'm personally excited to see what comes of it. It feels like things are moving a little bit faster too, which is kind of fun to see. One thing I like to ask people before we wrap it up is, there's tons of companies out there, and everyone seems to be going through a rebrand right now, whether it's Burger King or was it GE did it. Like, everyone's doing it, and everyone's got their hot take on whether or not they like it. What company would you love to do a rebrand for?
A rebrand for, that's such a good question, because I like a lot of the companies that I like are actually brand related, and it's hard for me to bond or connect with a brand that I don't see a lot of design put into it. One of the things that always kind of like blew my mind is the Time Out magazine. I know that their logo is kind of like an institution, but for me, it doesn't make sense. It almost feels like it's like a squished logo. And I always thought, like, I would love to work on that logo and come up with something different.
Would you change the red outline that they do? Or would you just do the typeface?
I've seen so many different outlines and many different styles, and neons and yellows and reds. And I don't know, like, it's hard for me to even think if there is some sort of like palette or
design system. Yeah, I always wonder if like what would happen if they got rid of, because it feels aggressive. I'm talking about the stroke, the red, especially it's a rectangle box on the perimeter of the cover. Red is just, I mean, it makes sense. It's the news. I understand the color, but I would love to see someone or them like just update it. Like, maybe we don't need the red box outline anymore, but I mean, I don't know. That's
maybe not a rebrand, but a refresh.
Mm-hmm. Would you do, this is like super in the weeds, and I don't know if you've ever thought about that much. Do you feel like time would be a sans serif word mark, or would it be serif?
Wow, what a question.
I know. So for those that don't know or don't know the difference, right now it's a serif. Their current logo is a serif. And to Johnny's point, it looks squished. It looks like someone didn't hold down shift. I've actually said that before.
That's exactly it, yes.
I thank you for getting that joke or that reference, because I say it a lot, or not just about the time, but I will say things and people are like, what? I'm like, it just looks like they didn't hold down shift when they did it.
Yes. It's like the ratio has been modified.
Yes.
It's a tricky question because, you know, if you answer serif, then you're maybe like chobanizing it. And I don't even know if that's a verb. But you know what I mean? Like making your brand more chobani. And if you sans serif it, then you're just going with brands like, you know, like Burberry and brands that might have kind of like lost personality to some extent. I would probably go with sans serif, just because I feel that that's more aligned with their brand. But I wouldn't be, I would not consider, at least having one approach or one creative direction, with serif font. I like to have to do that, you know, like when there's a project, like working with a more conservative approach, like design, than having something that's more out there, and then having something that is like completely out of the box that, you know, like they're probably gonna say no, but what if, you know, if it's a strong concept, it might make it through.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, as you're talking, you know who I could see you working for, and it's probably gonna happen. I could see you working with a New Yorker. I feel like it very much fits you. And plus that brand is just amazing. I remember one point I kind of stumbled, maybe it was Dribbble or Instagram. I found someone that was, a lot of her work was in the New Yorker. That's what they were using for the covers. And I was like, oh my God, it was like from the artist. I was like, I need to buy like all her prints. But the New Yorker is just one of those, you can spot it from the newsstand. It's just so iconic, but I could totally see you working with them.
Like working on a cover for them?
Working on a cover, working on whether they're doing like an experience, you know, maybe they're, let's say this is in a couple years in the future and they're like, hey, we're renting out a museum and we want to have, you know, full on a mural or something. I don't know. I just see you working with them.
And oh, wow. Alyssa, that would be awesome. I also like artists that usually illustrated for the New Yorker. And there's this one, there's a designer that I love. She's called Malika Fabre. She has this like very flat colored, kind of like she plays with negative shapes. And she has done like, I don't know, like at least I believe 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And I buy that magazine for the illustrations. And to be honest, I didn't even read them. I just bought them just to, you know, just to have them, yeah. Almost like collectibles.
I've done the same thing. I used to get them shipped to my apartment in college. And I think my roommates thought I was like really like, you know, educated. I mean, not to say that I'm not, but to your point, I wasn't reading them for the articles. I got them for the covers. I had asked for the subscription because it's beautiful. I mean, almost every cover, you could just frame it because it's so unique. And I've always wondered from like a design perspective, like what is the, because they come out so frequently, you've got to wonder, they're at least working like what, maybe 6 to 8 weeks in advance. Like because of how quickly they have to turn them out, which again, I could totally see you pulling it off or doing an experience of some sort with them, or some, maybe the New Yorker and Webflow do some event in like 2023 together. And you know, you're the lead designer heading it up or something.
Oh, wow.
I'm putting it out there. It's gonna happen. I'm in the manifestation, so I could see it. That'd be awesome. No, I think, I mean, I'm so glad you did this. You're amazing. I think you're so smart. Like I said, your portfolio is really incredible. What's one kind of project do you want to work on, that you're like, I don't really get to do it all that often, or it's not your strong suit? What's something you would love to add to your portfolio? Is it 3D?
It's definitely 3D. Yeah. I have like so many things on my kind of like design bucket list that I kind of like add them there. Like, okay, one day I'll get back to this, I'll do it. And I've bought a bunch of 3D courses and I've read a lot about 3D. I never got the time invested to, you know, explore and have fun and break things and just like stay like, you know, until, I don't know, 4 a.m. just like playing around and with Blender or Octane.
That's cool. I can see you doing that. Yeah, 3D is an interesting one. I think 3D is fun to kind of see where it goes. And I love that stuff. I think the potential is really amazing. I don't have it in me to play with 3D. I think because I'm too much of a perfectionist that and also I'm the type of designer, I don't know if you're the same way. I can't stop. Like I need someone else to take it because I just prefer the process. I will just keep iterating and iterating. And finally it just looks like, this is why I make so many comps too, but I'll just iterate forever because I'd rather do that. And then finally someone's like, okay, it's due. Can you just give me what you need? I'm like, okay, can you pick the one? Cause I've given you I made six. And I feel like 3D, I would just never be satisfied, which says a lot about me.
I always think about myself, I'm way better at starting than I am at finishing. When I start, I make all these comms and different options and different approaches and different, paths. And then it's hard for me sometimes to just, get it to the final line and get it out there. And actually after that, being happy with the decision that I took and 100% proud of it and not wonder what if we took the other direction?
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, that's cool. Are you one of those people that once it's out in the wild, you care what people think, or you look forward to the results of the marketing speak? Did it get more clicks? Did it do this? Did it do that? Or you're just like, I'm on to the next thing?
That's a great question because there is a lot that's kind of driven by metrics, right? There's a lot of there's a lot about patterns and about, doing things that people are more used to or more comfortable with. Therefore, you wouldn't place a menu icon bottom left because people would probably not expect that. So there are design decisions that you just go for because it is what people expect. It is the pattern that has been established, whether it is human-centered design, or whether it is material design, there are things that you have to go for. But if you can put a little, your spin to that, if you can play around and just propose, a new thing, I will at least, one of my options is at least going to be that. But I'm always aware that you don't always have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes some things are more, you don't need to overthink or you don't need to come up with something new. It's more about function than creativity.
I mean, that's the best way to end the podcast. That's a mic drop moment right there. So thank you, Johnny, for doing this. You've been amazing. Where can people find you? What's your website, your Twitter handle, Dribble, whatever you want to promote? The floor is yours.
You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com, at Call Me Johnny. And you can find me on Dribble and Webflow, under It's Johnny, Johnny spelled Johnnie. It's probably going to be written in some place.
Definitely. It'll be on the website. It'll be in the show notes. He'll get a tweet shout out. Hire him, follow him, become a fan. So then when he's working for the New Yorker or any band that you like, we can be like, I knew him when.
Designing a basketball court.
Yes. Yeah. Man, you're going to be busy. I think you're going to end up in New York because you're going to do the basketball court. Maybe you'll do it for the Knicks or the Nets. No, definitely not the Knicks. The Nets probably because they're actually winning, which sorry to any Knicks fan, but Disney's soul already dunked on you. I can't hurt you more than that. Let's see. Okay. We'll say it's 4 years in the future. Johnny is making a court for the Nets. He is working on the New Yorker installation for maybe Fashion Week or some Webflow conference or some experience. And let's see, what was the other thing we wanted you to do? See, you're just going to be too big time.
Albums.
Too big time. Albums, yes. And then at the same time, you're going to be going at lunch, after working through your lunch to go work with whatever. Blink-182, they're going to be doing a reissue of Enema of the State, and they're going to be hiring you. So we're putting that out there. It's all going to happen. He's going to be busy, but like you said, being healthy is important. So I hope you're also taking your vitamins. So if you're listening to this in a few years, Johnny, just make sure you take your vitamins and drink lots of water.
Will do. Will do.
Thank you so much. It was awesome talking to you. I hope you have an awesome day. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me here.